Good evening and welcome to Slam the Gavel, the show that tells it all regarding family court, other court issues, as well as CPS. I am your host, Marianne Petrie. This episode of Slam the Gavel is sponsored by CPS Protect Consulting Services. Child Protective Services cases are among the most frightening experiences any parent can endure. Don't face them alone. With urgent assist by CPS Protect, you get the peace of mind to raise your children as you see fit. And the personalized assistance of their team of expert child welfare consultants, former CPS investigators themselves, right when you need it. Get started absolutely free at cpsprotect.com/register. And this is available in all 50 states. I have another announcement. Go to the site, pleasedoyourjob.com. We need 2,000 more signatures to get a very, very important case reopened. That's pleasedoyourjob.com. I have a return guest on. I have Tim Goldich. He is an author. He was last on my podcast, season 4, episode 149, 120, 80, 58, and 32, and season 5, episode 24 and 48. And the last time he was on, we talked about the effects of girls maturing faster than boys and the role of patriarchy in the film Barbie. And we just had a great conversation with that. And we're going to talk today about feminine power. And so I welcome you, Tim. How are you? And what do you think of this feminine power?
Oh, my. Well, first of all, I'm doing very well. Really happy to be here. Always really enjoy our conversations. They're great. I'm just going to come right out and say I've got this big zit on my nose.
Oh, no.
And so that's what it is. It is what it is. I'm not going to bother worrying about it. And though I will keep myself in the dark a little bit.
Oh.
And yeah, female power. So that's an enormous subject matter, and it's there's so much to say about it. But I guess I'll start out by explaining why it's resisted. Why do we not really know about female power, female weaponry, female efficacy, female equal partnership in the human system? Why are we so blind to this?
Mm-hmm.
I think on a purely intuitive level, we know that women have power. I mean, if you go into some big auditorium and say, everybody who believes women have no power, raise your hand. You know, I don't think anybody's going to raise their hand. I mean, we just know on an intuitive level, on a lived experience level, that somehow the female collective, the sisterhood, has power and has a way of a force of influence in everything. So, to take a look at what's going on there. So so men don't want to hear about female power, and they sure don't want to hear about their own vulnerability to it. That's very antithetical to being male and male identity. And women don't really want to hear about female power either. They don't want to, the feminine doesn't want to be accountable, doesn't want this, it's and here's where we go down the rabbit hole. It's basically women are clinging to virtue, the moral high ground. And why would they do that? Well, okay, so men may look upon women and think, wow, I mean, they just got everything. Look, they've got beauty, grace, goodness, home, family, parenting. They've got everything along the love axis. So I have to cling tight to what I've got, because with this little, what little I've got, you see, is all I've got. And so there's that fear, that insecurity of men vis-a-vis women. And then, of course, it works in reverse, too. You just look in the mirror opposite them, and you see women looking at men, and they think, oh, my God, man, they've got intellect, competence, prestige, toughness, strength, courage. They've got everything along the respect axis. So I've got to cling to what I've got, because, geez, you know, this little, what little I've got is all I've got, see?
Mm-hmm.
So out of this well of insecurity on both sides, the sexes cling to what they've got. So one of the primary things that women have is the sort of moral high ground, the virtue, the goodness, you know, man bad, woman good, right? Mm-hmm. And so woman's going to want to cling to that as if it were all she's got, and therefore any kind of power that she's acknowledged to have goes with it the specter of blame.
Mm-hmm.
And We'll talk in a moment about the difference between blame and accountability, but blame is a judgment, right? So blame says that if a woman is to blame, then she's at fault, and so she's not being not being purely good, and so that's very offensive. It's like to accuse a woman of being bad is like accusing a man of being a coward, you see. It's where the egos are invested.
But
See,
what do you go
yeah.
ahead. Well, what do you think when even okay, like the Salem witch trials, or
Yeah.
say even what happened in my case, you have females turning on females.
Well, that can happen, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Well, generally throughout history, women have kept the company of other women. And so when women get angry with someone, it's probably with another woman, you know. It's just like look at the violence men have done to men. So yeah, that's still another thing to look at is intra-sex hostility. Male hostility toward men and female hostility toward women. But let's get back to this. Okay, let's take a look at the difference between accountability and blame. They're often used kind of interchangeably, but they're very, very different things. So accountability is you did A, B, and C, X, Y, and Z were the results, the consequences of those actions. I invite you to take responsibility. No judgment. Blame, on the other hand, is you did A, B, and C, X, Y, and Z were the consequences. You're an asshole and you ruined my life. See, blame is packed with judgment. Blame makes the other wrong. But accountability doesn't necessarily make the other person wrong. Just says this is what you did, and these are the consequences. In my men's group, I'm a part of an organization called the New Warriors, and accountability is huge in that male environment. You see, it's perhaps the one biggest concept we deal in. And so let's imagine someone's comes to a new warrior meeting and they're late and they're new to new warriors. They don't know what's going on. So they're asked, "Why were you late?" And he says, "Well, traffic was bad." We say, "Well, nah, the buzzer goes, no, that's wrong. That's what happened. Now, why were you late?" I said, "Well, I couldn't find a place to park." Again, nope, that's not it. That is not it. So why were you late? So eventually he gets to his truth. He says, "Well, on the way to the meeting, I stopped off and got some laundry from the cleaners. And when I did that, I made a choice to complete a task above being ensured of being here on time, you see. So when a man makes outside influences like parking and traffic responsible for the outcome, he's disempowering himself. We're not interested in blaming the man. We all understand the importance of completing a task. We're no strangers to this want to stop off, and maybe you can squeeze that in, you know. What we're after is just for the man to understand that he was late as a, on the basis of his own choice, you see, and thus the man is empowered when he understands that he's responsible for the outcome. All right, so that's true for women also, okay? Now, here's the thing about accountability. It tastes bad, but it's good for us. It's like medicine. It tastes bad, but it's good for us, you see. And because it tastes bad, we both, men and women, have habits around evading accountability, right? But with women, it becomes a judgment when, see, the thing is, if woman is equal partner in the human systems, and she's equal partner in crime as well, which is true, actually. Women really do ply force of influence in war and maintaining war and initiating war and sustaining it. It's Woman and man are equal partners in the human system. They play an equal overall force of influence and are equally responsible for outcomes. That's the gender equalist way of looking at it. And why is that important? So the alternative is that we have a tendency then, you see, if men have the power, then men bear all the responsibility. If men have the power, then women are not really responsible for what goes on, right? I'll illustrate that. So imagine a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down, and you strap him into a car and tape his hands to the wheel, and then you send the car hurtling into a crowd of people. Well, the quadriplegic can't be held responsible. He had no power, had no influence in the outcome at all. He was just, and so if someone has no power, then they're not responsible for outcomes. And thus women become the innocent victims, you see, and you mustn't blame the victim. You mustn't blame the victim. The victim is innocent. So this, I think, is what woman, I should say, is clinging to. The sort of female collective, the whatever that is, whatever you want to call it, the feminine or whatever, is clinging to innocence. And again, it comes out of that deep feeling that I have to have that. I have to have the moral high ground because without it, I've got nothing. And again, accusing a woman of being bad, to use the B word, okay, I'll just say, bitch, okay, we cannot handle it, we're not gonna
You're allowed to swear.
yeah, we're not gonna fall to pieces because we first read this word, that's like calling a man a coward. And even to this day, even though we're enlightened over what we were, 500 years ago, but even still, you go up to a man and say, coward, chicken, chicken. And even if he knows you're joking, it will still provoke this emotional response. And men can't bear it to be called a chicken or a coward or a weakling, And that's where, because that's where we've got our ego invested in that. Meanwhile, you could, for most women, you could say chicken, chicken. That's just not going to land, very much. There'll be exceptions, of course, but in general, that's just not where she's probably got her ego, So, but if you call her the B word, she's incensed because she has a deep ego investment in virtue and in goodness and compassion and sensitivity and refinement, and you see all these sort of, feminine qualities along the female axis. So that's why we evade the concept of female power. But what the problem with that is then the result we will tend to demonize men and infantilize women. Because what other kind of people do we not hold accountable? If we let someone off the hook, even though they're guilty, that's like a kid who throws a baseball and breaks a window, and he's only 5 years old, so we don't hold him all that accountable, really. He's just a kid, but that's what we do with children. It's not so. So it's really important as a, as the as gender reality, gender politics, gender relations evolve, it becomes more and more important that we have empathy for both sexes and accountability for both sexes. Yeah.
Well, when you said that, for instance, in court, if an accusation is placed on a person, there's no accountability. The problem will get solved and they'll figure out, no, that person was lying, but there's no consequences for the person making the false accusation, whether it be a man or a woman.
Well, It's usually women that are working the false accusation. I mean, men have learned it. Men have learned this, that this can work for them. But it's generally been women who want to maintain their primacy in parenting have used this as a device to cut men out, cut fathers out, or at least
Or,
reduce them.
well, like in my case, my ex is married to a woman who enjoys her job in the courthouse. So there were, she couldn't have kids of her own, so she stole mine. So, I mean, so I get it that women are making the accusations because really a lot of this came from her because. Had he not married her, I don't think you and I would even be here having this conversation. I would not have had a podcast. None of this would be going on. But she was sneaky. So I think it's maybe a personality disorder thing that goes along with this.
Well, yeah, I mean, if someone does something that wicked, there's certainly a personality disorder involved. But also, you have to look at the power she wielded. She wielded some sort of female power to make this happen. She was ruthless with it. She abused some kind of female power to take you out.
Oh yeah. And my kids. So I would say that's a personality disorder because there are good women that and good men that would never dream of ruining somebody's life based on a lie. I mean, there are good, they're few and far between.
Well, look at what the court demands. You see, it's like the court threatens both parents with the worst thing they can imagine. What's the worst thing you can imagine? Having your children taken from you. So, yeah, the better angels of our natures are really tested under such a circumstance. And women, they have a presumed innocence, a power that they can exploit and abuse in some cases. And so it's been tough to hold false accusers accountable, in part because they're women, and in part because if you want someone to withdraw their false accusation, they're not going to do it if they're threatened with terrible consequences. So the courts had a tough situation. They're a little bit between a rock and a hard place about that. What do you do? You need this person to recant their accusation. And how do you do that if it means jail time? So that's been kind of one of the issues there with that.
Or why waste taxpayer dollars? Why not have them pay a hefty fine? Because I mean, those false
Because, well, even fining women has been really problematic because usually they're mothers, and if you fine the mother, you're fining the children also. You're taking food right off the table, as it were, you see. It's very it's female power is very real, even if we don't acknowledge it, and there's all kinds of it. So I would say to look at what female power is comprised of, it's things like beauty and sexual power, it's presumed innocence, it's moral authority, motherhood power, it's the far greater power to elicit empathy. I mean, that's the power that raises only female concerns to the level of major societal concerns. It's a power to shame, which is huge. Men are very susceptible to it. You see, many of these powers that women have, these are not powers that feminism will choose to define as power, but they are powers that men must contend with, powers toward which men are extremely vulnerable, and powers that in their own way do much to shape our human world. For example, as seen from a politicized male perspective, okay, and I want to emphasize that, as seen from a politicized male perspective, the so-called patriarchy is nothing more than men everywhere set in fierce competition in their efforts to perform, achieve, and succeed their way into having what women are empowered to demand of them. Now, again, I'm not saying that's reality in its entirety. I'm saying that's reality, that's a gender reality as seen from a politicized male perspective. And from a politicized female perspective, patriarchy is this sort of standalone male power that rules the human world and is basically the source of all evil. It's the source of violence and criminality and pollution and sexism and all things bad. But from a gender equalist perspective, there's never been a patriarchy, at least not as feminist defined. Gender equalism sees instead a patra-matra, either a patra-matriarchy when you're looking at a balance of power, or a patra-matra census when you're looking at male-female consensus, like the gender system was co-created by woman and man and co-equal partnership, because out of the deal, each sex got what it wanted most. But that would be an example of a patra-matra census where the men and women were on the same page, as it were, about that. And but the patra-matriarchy is the balance of male and female power. And I know that goes against the grain. I know there's people out there that look at that and go, "You're nuts." It's because they're just looking at men, male power. This is the only kind of power they understand. That's larger physical size and strength. It's paycheck power. It's bank account. It's titles. Stripes on the shoulder. It's a badge. It's senator CEO kind of power. But these female kinds of powers are very real, and you see, it becomes increasingly important as this whole gender reality, gender relations develop. As women keep adding more male power to their arsenal, it becomes increasingly important to hold women accountable, the female collective. What it has done in the school system, right? I mean, come on, the feminism has infiltrated every corner of academia. And look what we got. We got safe spaces and trigger warnings, and we got this. I just, woman really needs to take a look at what she's doing. Woman just is so automatically blames the patriarchy for everything, you see. And again, that's disempowering. When a man makes traffic and parking responsible for the outcome, he's disempowering himself. And when woman makes patriarchy responsible for the outcomes, she's disempowering herself.
So patriarchy is hurting everybody.
Yes, but so is matrix census, if you want, or the sister, if you want to look at it that way. Both sexes are applying both positive and negative influence into the world. Yes, we can hold patriarchy accountable for all things bad, but then if we do that, then we have to credit patriarchy with everything good too. So you see, when woman absolves herself of responsibility in the world, she's also depriving herself of the credit. All right, so we've talked before about how the evolution of human parenting parallels the evolution of human technology. They're even synergistic in some ways, and they follow a similar trajectory. So for the longest time, human technology, oh, it's going up a little bit here and there with some little spikes and things, but it started to pick up a little bit, even in the Middle Ages, and the Renaissance much quicker, and the Enlightenment much quicker, and then in modern times it just goes shoom, practically straight up. Well, it's the same trajectory with human parenting. even just back in the 50s and 60s, there was some really shadowy stuff going on where, like, parents would go to incredible lengths to prevent their children from masturbating, for example. And, it was just very, parenting had progressed enormously by the 50s, but it still, had a ways to go. And so you see, arguably, this female force of influence in the evolving of human parenting has been the result has been signposts like the Geneva Convention, inconceivable, even 100 years earlier, just inconceivable. Holding leaders responsible for war crimes. This is a new concept of the U.S. Constitution. It gets decried because we declare all men are created equal. But historically, you have to understand what enormous leap forward that was for its time
Back
when,
then, back
oh
then.
my God, back then there were nothing but kings and queens and royalty, and everybody else was a peasant, they were all created equal. That was an amazing leap of faith that Thomas Jefferson took there in penning that and writing it into the Declaration of Independence. This was an extraordinary thing to do, and it was a signpost of this evolution in human parenting, which was an evolution in human empathy, social skills, compassion for others, mental health. It was, and so we might be seeing a slide in that. The parenting might have peaked a little earlier. Now maybe it's going the other way. You talk about personality disorders. Well, the parenting is probably peaked, like in the 60s and 70s or something. I don't know, but has maybe been, backsliding since then. But this is female power, and if you refuse the reality of female power, then your view of women throughout history is nothing more than property and chattel. And think of the spiritual damage done to women to think that their legacy is that bleak. That is false. I'm gonna there's there was a I'll give a specific. I'm speaking so abstractly here. Let me talk about a woman from ancient Rome. Okay, so what we know is that there was this Emperor Constantine, right? And he chose Christianity as the official religion of the Holy Roman Empire. What's less known is that he had little to do with it, really. It was his mother. Okay, it was Saint Helena who persuaded Constantine to convert to Christianity. She became obsessed with Christianity, okay, and so she was the force of influence behind that, and she was appointed something that they called Augusta Imperatrix, Imperatrix, if I'm pronouncing that right. So that gave her unlimited access to the treasury. She was the one who built all these ancient Christian churches, who gathered up the ancient Christian relics, who and by doing so, there's a quote, says in raising Christianity to such enormous heights, it was utterly transforming as it did the social, political, and religious landscape of antiquity and bequeathing a legacy that shaped history through the Middle Ages and beyond. So the thing is, this Helena, she was not an emperor. And yet, arguably, she had far greater force of influence, impact on the entire world and on all history than any Roman emperor. And rather than be assassinated, like almost all the Roman emperors were, she lived to be 80 and died of old age. Okay. So woman, okay, so let's take a look. Another thing. Let's take a look at what characterizes female power versus male power. So I will say that, well, first of all, I'll just call any power that's wielded more by women than by men is female power, just as any power that's wielded more by men than women is male power. All right. So what characterizes these two things? So male power, I would say, is can be characterized as objective. It is more overt. It is more centralized. That is, it's less evenly distributed. I would say that we have some really outsized power from various senators, CEOs, presidents, and that kings, and so on. And that power is less evenly distributed among men in general. I will characterize female power as more subjective, indirect. See, even like our friend Helena there, kind of stood behind the emperor, and she was the one pulling the strings, right, and making it happen. But he was sort of the figurehead, the one, and we still think that Constantine was the one who brought Christianity up from obscurity into this enormous entity that it's become. But he had little to do with it. It wasn't he. He wasn't the one that did it. It was his mother. So it's more indirect in nature and more evenly distributed. That it may not look like that, maybe to women, but beauty and sexual power. Yeah, of course, obviously some women wield a lot more of it than others, but it's still more. Probably, I think more evenly distributed than like political power that men would have. And then there's like motherhood power. That's almost universal to women. Moral authority, and other those subtle things like a higher average emotional and verbal acuity. Most men feel like they've never won an argument with a woman in their whole life. And there is something to that about how women can run rings around men emotionally and verbally. There's the majority vote power. There's women dominate consumer spending in almost every category, and that has an influence on advertisers, and that has an influence on the media. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, well, women buy all sorts of, things that, like makeup. We have to look nice for guys, right?
Yeah, last I heard it was like $50 billion a year
So,
in cosmetic
and yarn, because a lot of us like to knit, okay?
surgery.
So, but and guys like to buy, ammunition things, and because I know my husband's bought all sorts of, gadgets like that, if you know. And so, and that was one of our deals when we bought this house, was if we buy it, could he buy two guns? And I
Oh my
said,
God.
okay, sure. I don't know what these things cost. He never told me, but I don't care. He's happy with his
Yeah.
stuff, So, I mean,
I didn't even want to go into that whole thing about guns. I mean,
no, I
that's just
won't.
nuts,
Yeah, I won't go into that.
I have no affinity or connection to guns or have any interest,
Well,
but a lot of people do. So, and it's
well,
mostly men, a lot of women too, but mostly men that want to carry a weapon.
well, the thing is, like when I was dating guys, they would like to take me sharpshooting, right?
Yeah.
So, Back when my eyes were better and I could see better, a boyfriend took me to the shooting range and I got the bullseye the first time. And he looked at me, he goes, You bitch. And it's like, I didn't
You
care.
wounded his ego. You see what you did? That was,
I
I'm
know.
not, obviously, I'm not, judging you or anything. That was great, but I'm just saying
I know.
there is ego eggs in that basket. And so you just, emasculated him in that moment because he's fragile around that. Again, it's like if I don't have that, I don't have anything. See, that sort of psychology is going on. So, I mean, that just illustrates how fragile men are, where they've got their ego invested, and women are fragile where they've got their ego invested also.
Oh yeah, definitely. Then my husband took me sharpshooting. It's like I didn't like these pistols he had. You know how you pull them back and then they bite you right here.
No,
And it's like,
I
oh,
don't
that
even
hurt.
know
Oh, because I'm on Brilinta,
that.
and it's like I bleed easily, and I it's like I don't like this. I said I really think these guns need to be oiled. I think that's what the problem is.
Oh,
And so, little did I know, or we knew, that a guy right next to us in the next booth was someone he used to work with, and he came over and said, "Well, this is hey, they're all talking," and he was looking at the guns. He goes, "Yeah, those need to be oiled." And I'm like going, "Oh."
So once again, I wounded that guy's ego, right?
I
Funny.
know,
That is funny.
but I mean, I don't want to like. I didn't like harp on it. I just.
No, of course not. I'm not saying anything like that. Oh gosh, that's funny.
I always push, and I mean, on Facebook, I always push men and women to work together to solve these problems in the family court system. I mean, because mothers and fathers, I know everyone has been wounded, and
Right.
I don't
Everyone's
want,
wounded.
right, and I don't want it to be like a gender war, because we have got to pull together to find this solution to stop this insanity. And
And that's
like,
one of the main reasons why we need to understand female power so we can understand female equal partnership, because these problems, these gender issues, were created by woman and man in partnership, and they can only be addressed and solved by woman and man in partnership. Yeah, you see, that's
right.
brief.
Because I was talking to a mother who, I don't know, the ex somehow got custody, but the woman, the judge was female, and she has her own weird mommy issues. Okay. So again, we're dealing with personalities, right? So she's ruling according to what she's being told to do by we'll say the opposing attorney. Because they're all in cahoots together. So I want to know why a male judge or a female judge, why can't they just stand up for what is right and say, you know what, I'm not buying into this. This father didn't do anything wrong. This mother didn't do anything wrong. It's a mess.
It's a mess. I only fairly recently learned that judges aren't even responsible for knowing the law.
Yeah, even though they were like their lawyers who became judges, but then it's a free for all in family court, not so much in criminal court.
But a judge is really there just to judge which lawyer is winning.
Right, based on money.
Yeah, based on money, A lot based on money,
But I still want parents to come together and work together, because there was some meme on Facebook 2 days ago that it was National Parent Day. That's all it said, was National Parent Day. And a male made a comment, "I hope all you single mothers out there ask for more child support," something to that effect.
Yes, I'm right.
And I wrote, "Look, don't make this a gender war. This is a money war. If you want to look at it, yeah, we've all been damaged, but I don't hate men just because my ex stole custody.
Right.
I don't hate you and say, oh, that I don't want to interview Tim because he's a guy. I'm only gonna interview women. We have to work together.
We
And
do.
yes, and
Do.
but I don't like seeing stuff like that. I'm gonna call it out when I see it because everyone's getting hurt. And seeing something like that hurt me because I know it's hurting other it's hurting the whole system of trying to, I don't know, people want to fix family court when it really should be abolished and get rid of what, how did you call it?
Well, there's the patrimatriarchy.
Yes. Yeah, because they're working together to hurt
Yes.
men and women.
Yes. Yes. Well, the battle of the sexes rages, and there are casualties on both sides. It's a, it's been escalating. It's becoming increasingly vicious, and both sexes have a lot of bitterness in them. So that guy, that comment, you know, it's bitter, and it's mostly gender politics that's creating and escalating this battle of the sexes and making it more toxic. There is this basic battle of the sexes that goes all the way back to the Pleistocene, okay? And it just derives because men and women have differing strategies for reproduction, different priorities and so on. So there's a certain male-female conflict that's just built in. But all of this bitterness, this intersex rage, rancor, resentment, victim, vindictiveness, vengeance, poison, that's gender politics
Right.
that's doing it, not really gender reality.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's a shame, really.
It is. I think so. So you see, if you can break through and really raise awareness of female power, what it is, how it works, how the channels it works through, then it becomes possible to view woman as equal partner in the human system, equally responsible for outcomes. And then it becomes possible for woman and man to call it even. So as a gender equalist, I mean, it's not an endpoint. It's a goal, but not it's not the endpoint. It's a new beginning. If woman and man could call it even, and then revisit all gender issues as matters of shared responsibility, then these gender issues are not diminished. They don't cancel each other out. You have like anorexia on one hand and anabolic steroid abuse on the other. They don't cancel each other out. The issues remain as deep and crucial as ever. But what changes is the attitude toward them. What changes is the gender politicians. That's really what changes. So that the gender politicians, if they're gender equalists, then I, what if I'm if I'm let's say the discussions about sexual harassment. Well, as a gender politician myself, or well, let's not call me a gender how about a gender theorist? I'm obsessed with all things gender, right? So I want to hear every little bit about it. I want to know everything. I'm a sponge. Tell me everything about it. How did that feel? What is that about? How does that affect you? But you see, if I'm talking to a gender equalist, then I know that she knows that I know that she knows that there's always a mirror opposite to these things. And so when we're through talking about sexual harassment, we can then talk about economic harassment, about how wealthy men are targeted for false accusations, for paternity fraud, for extortions of various kinds, you see. And we take turns. We take turns. And so neither one of us has to get all that worked up or get triggered. You know, I have to, she can be talking about how some joke, some sexist joke, undermined her, her feeling of being undermined by even some flattering remark. You look great in that red dress, ooh, you know, whatever it is, you know, and how in the moment she can feel diminished by that and her authority undermined, you know.
Well, then she has poor self-esteem.
Well, yeah, it may be a little fresh, but still, I still want to hear it. I want to hear all about that. And I don't want to get triggered. I don't want to be going, yeah, but something else. I want to open the space for her to feel safe to describe that experience. And I can do that with a fellow gender equalist because we take turns.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting.
She owns her power. She owns female power as a thing that females generally have. She un understands female force of influence in the system. She understands what female power is comprised of and how it works and so on. And she's accountable.
Right, and she doesn't lord it over you.
Right. So she doesn't create this moral polarity. She's not all about man bad, the overempowered oppressor, woman good, the innocent victim. She sees these things in a more balanced way. And so she doesn't s divide humanity into good and bad.
Yeah, open-mindedness.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people have to be more open-minded, and that's why I'm so glad I had you come on today to talk about this. And
Thank you.
again, we had another awesome conversation, and I'd like to have you come back on again.
Court.
And I know, I mean, I will put your information in to reach you, which would be tagolditch99@gmail.com. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this?
Oh, I think we've covered it. I mean, I could go on, all day, but it's I think we've done a pretty good job of covering it, and I just really appreciate you and this program that you do and this opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Don't jump off, okay? Dismantling Family Court Corruption and Slam the Gavel podcast is to help the public understand what really goes on in these family courtrooms. I'm your host, Marianne Petrie, author of Dismantling Family Court Corruption, Why Taking the Kids Was Not Enough, Cry Out for Justice, Poems of Truth, and Raised by These Wolves, How Family and Federal Courts Are Failing Our Children. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple iTunes, Anchor FM, iHeartRadio, and platforms I don't know about. And feel free to buy me a coffee to help keep this podcast going. And that will be in the podcast notes as well. Thank you, Tim Golditch, and you'll be back.
I'll be back.
You'll be back.
I will be back.